Okay, everybody ready?
Yep.
Okay, good morning, October 27th, 2020. Welcome to the workshop meeting, and we could all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. We do so much better when we're all there at the same time. Okay, can we please take the roll, Jennifer?
Director Krakowski?
Present.
Director Mora?
Present.
Director Armstrong?
Present.
Director Edwards?
Present.
Director Swan?
Present.
All directors are present.
Thank you. Are there any? Well, that won't work, will it?
Sorry about that.
Were there any emails or messages regarding anyone that wanted to say anything from the public today?
I have not received any emails, and I do not see any members of the public participating in the meeting online today.
Okay, and we will get started with the information items. 4A, review and discussion of the district's land development policies and processes, including participation in county land use planning processes.
Well, 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 this is coming to you today because you've probably heard about the Yonder Yosemite project, another land development project proposed for what's sometimes referred to as the SCAR. I'm not sure what other names are out there for it, but the vacant piece of ground in between Big Oak Flat and Groveland. And that always sparks some public interest and public questioning about what we as a district are involved in, what we can and can't do, how we do or don't cover the cost of providing service to something like that. And so this is intended just to give an overview of what our current policies are, do a direction check to make sure that your understanding of the process and the policy are consistent with your beliefs for this type of stuff and whether we need to address any policies in the future. But I can tell you these are the most detailed policies, development policies that I have ever seen or worked in. We have not gone through the process of modifying them yet because I don't know exactly how far we want to go with it. But I can just tell you that there's a lot of pages in just what I sent you, and that's only about half of the development section of the policy manual. And Bob and John, I don't know if either of you were involved during the Long Gulch era at all, but these were prior to working through the Long Gulch project. The district did not have such extensive policies. These policies were written to kind of plug all the gaps on anything that could come out of a project like that that could have doubled the population. And so anyway, they're very helpful, but they're extremely detailed, which leaves opportunities for problems too. So I provided some select policies in the packet. One of them is policy 601, which is basically a statement of intent. And in reality, the goal of the development process for the district is we're here to provide services. We're not here to grow our customer base arbitrarily or for revenue generation or anything else. We're here to provide services within the boundaries and to annex properties that are outside the boundaries that need services to develop and that we can provide to. So also we're not allowed under California law to make a profit off of any development project. In other words, we can't have them rebuild the entire water system just to be able to get water service, you know. We have to have a reasonable relationship between what we require them to build and what the impact is or effort to provide service. So that is in the statement of intent on the district's policies. It pretty much says we're going to look at capacities. We're going to identify what the demand is on the project. We're going to have them have the developer provide deposits so that there's no direct cost to existing district customers, whether or not the project is successful. That they're going to, if they are going to develop, that they are building the infrastructure that's necessary at their expense, and then dedicating any public infrastructure to the district, meeting our standards for construction, a lot of processes and agreements and checks and balances in the development process to make sure that those things happen. Because it's really, to some degree, it's kind of like a game. The developer comes in and they're not always there to bring a huge benefit to the community for themselves. They are, in most cases, looking to develop a project that then is marketable and they can make money. The more money they make, the better they feel about what they did. We are, in many cases, right square in the middle in the way on those things, if you know what I mean. It is very costly to do underground infrastructure, build tanks, put in booster pumps. You know, all of those things are very expensive. And the developers typically will want to fight tooth and nail about everything that you require of them. And it's, you know, oh, you're killing me. From the very minute you meet them, I've met very few that have come in and said, hey, we'll do what is necessary to get the service because we want a rock solid good project. Love it if they do, but they usually don't. So that is any question about our intent of what the policies mean and what our responsibilities are. Let me back up a little bit about how these things occur. What happens is the county has a general plan, and the general plan and the other planning ordinances identify areas, identify properties that are zoned a certain way, expecting a certain type of development and use on that property. When the development project occurs on that zoning, then they go through, typically if they're going to be doing, if they're going to be building something and increasing traffic and potentially having environmental impact and service impact, they'll do a study. They'll put out the notice like they did with Terra V and under Canvas. The county will put out a notice that they're going through this process and they're looking to get input on what goes into the EIR. What we saw with some of the other processes that are outside the district boundaries is that what we ask for them to evaluate in the EIR is not always what winds up in the EIR, okay? And that's an environmental impact report. But because it's in the district boundaries, there's more of a relationship because they have to receive services and they have to receive those services under our terms and conditions. So we're intimately involved in responding to that, the request for preparation of the EIR. And our development policies are linked with that so that we make sure that our needs and concerns get addressed. So for example, if somebody was coming in and they were going to do some large manufacturing function on a piece of property and their water demand was in excess of what we could possibly get from the Hetch Hetchy system, not considering capacity of an individual pump, but let's just say it exceeded our agreement, We in order to serve them, we'd have to look for an alternate water supply, or increasing the contract with Hetch Hetchy if that was a limiting factor. But almost anything is possible with proper engineering. It's just expensive. So as far as capacities go, it's a fairly simple thing to do. It's just expensive. So the next policy that I'm going to just touch on really quickly is specific, using this example on the SCAR project. It's called Yonder Yosemite. And the first thing that happens is there's a preliminary information exchange and an indemnification agreement. In other words, we're going to go through an evaluation of their project and from an engineering and legal perspective, make sure that we have adequate water supply, sewer capacity, what has to be built, where, and all the while making sure that that is still within the developer's capacities. Because they may want to do something, but if it's going to cost $1 million of offsite improvements, it may not be cost effective anymore for them. Right now, we don't know exactly what's going to develop on any property. So we don't know what would need to be connected to our system or done differently with our system. So once we get the information from them and get a what's called an advance funding agreement or a deposit agreement so that we've got money in an account to pay for our administrative costs, our legal costs, our engineering costs associated with evaluating the project, then there's a, what in our policies is called a sub-area master plan. In my experience, it's typically not called that. It's more just an evaluation of the capacity of the infrastructure to serve the demand and what needs to be done. Might need a new tank or a larger tank, water storage tank. It might need a new sewer lift station and controls. It might need a larger water main. All of those things have to be identified up front so that the construction of those is included in the EIR for the project. Okay, so that's a timing thing with the county, because the right now the county is getting ready to work with the developer to do the EIR. And they're going to have to have a couple of months with us first before they can even start, so that we can identify what improvements need to be done to serve the demand. Okay. And when the primary ones are water and sewer. Park is not that big of a deal. Fire, we would have to know if it's going to be an unusual demand on fire. But we do hope to get the community facilities district in place before this gets its commitment. So we identify the improvements that have to be done. Those get looked at in the EIR. Our board has to take an action to accept the EIR as a responsible agency. We're not the lead for the EIR. We're married to it. Basically, we're part of the process because they're building some things that are going to be dedicated to us, and they're evaluated in the EIR. Then we enter into agreement for the construction review, the design review of the infrastructure and the inspection of that infrastructure installation, and ultimate right away and acceptance of that infrastructure in the end. And then even after that, there's another 2-year period of guarantees so that what they put in and we've inspected and accepted has to function for 2 years without problems, or they've got to make the repairs during that time. And all of this takes a lot of management time, a lot of time, from myself, from Jen, and then everything trickles down from there. Louis, Rachel, everybody gets a piece of it, because it's not easy to just pass something like this off and say, okay, somebody, you know, customer service person in the office here, implement these policies. You know, it's a very complicated web of legal processes. And I've actually served as an expert witness on behalf of an agency that got caught up in the middle of this stuff where a project didn't make it to the end and they had millions of dollars worth of infrastructure that the developer had to construct, and they had it in various stages of construction. They didn't follow the rules. They didn't build it properly. And so the district was not going to accept it, and the developer didn't want to spend the money to fix it. And that extended out into the crash, the economic crash back 07, 08, 09. And then anyway, developer came back later in 2017 and wanted to get paid for all of that infrastructure that they had installed. Anyway, it can go sideways really fast. So there's a process for us to approve, just like I was talking about with the failed development, there's a process for us to approve and accept that infrastructure. And we have to have certain guarantees on that. And then I also included the guidelines on the sub area master plan. And it's already becoming a point of controversy with this particular project. And I can say that because as of even last night, he was the project proponent, it was chasing me around wanting me to see if I could assign someone else to be at this meeting so that he could meet with me to talk to tell me why we don't need a sub area master plan. So the process has started. It's kind of, I expected it just, you know, they're trying to build this on the shoestring. So anyway, that's where we are on this. We will be considering, if they want to move forward, there will be an agreement on the board's agenda for the deposit, and the indemnification at our November board meeting. So did that clarify, explain, confuse? Do we understand our role?
Mm-hmm. That was good. I don't think John was here longer than I was, but I don't think either of us was here during the actual Long Gulch Ranch fiasco. This stuff here, which is very complicated, I believe was a bit, I was involved in getting the money back that we were still owed. So I got a little bit of background on what happened. This is pretty obviously locking the barn door after the horse was gone. That's why it's so complicated. It's, you know, this was after a pretty, as near as I can tell, a pretty loosey-goosey development plan. And so the, you know, retrospective approach was to try to prescribe everything to make sure you didn't, you know, it no longer applied to Long Gulch Ranch. That was water under the bridge, but this is the, not to have it happen again in the future. I'll just mention, for those of you who may not have been involved in that crap, the real problem with why we ended up having a loss, or, you know, a big controversy over the money was, we didn't make sure that they kept the deposit topped up. And so we ended up funding stuff after the deposit had run out. And then we ended up having to try to go back and get that money back, which we eventually were able to do. But, you know, that's an important thing, that whatever the deposit comes to be, it needs to have, you know, if it starts getting spent, it needs to get redeposited to make sure that we got enough money in reserve to cover our expenses. What happened with Long Gulch was there was a huge lot of environmental legal fees, you know, tens of thousands of dollars that didn't come due, didn't get billed until long after the project had been abandoned. Mm-hmm. So we were, you know, paying money for legal fees we were obligated to cover after the deposit was gone, and in fact after the project was pretty well dead. So there's a bunch of things to watch out for, but I'm sure that the current version of this is more complicated than it probably really needs to be. It's just, it was, you know, a reaction to a badly administered development plan back in 2007. Just context. Key thing is make sure that we get a big enough deposit and that they keep putting more money back in so that we don't end up short.
I'm of the opinion that the deposit account never gets below 5,000 or the maximum potential billing month or for our consultant work, not as much our administrative work, but more outside consultants in legal or engineering. But the process for this first agreement is the agreement is a single action of the board, but there's a feasibility and then there's the cost estimation. So initially, we'll look for a deposit likely in the amount of 10,000. And that will be just to gather the data and to look at that data and start to noodle it to see if there's any anything in there that's a deal killer. Okay, so all we're doing is pulling this information in, taking a look at it, and with the goal of developing an estimate of what those that needs of what that costs are going to be to the district or from the district throughout the project. So, and somebody would think, oh, it should be easy to estimate. Well, it's not, because we don't know how much of, we don't know how much design review and everything else is going to be required here. Are we designing a tank? Are we just, tapping them into a pipeline? In the beginning, we don't know. So we get the $10,000 up front. We begin to draw down on that. And at the same time, we in the agreement, there's an exhibit. This is the deposit agreement. There's an exhibit that says, here's the step one of the process. Here's our estimate. Here's step two of the process. Here's our estimate. Step three, step four, step five, all the way through the, the construction and acceptance of the project. And that that estimate is developed in after we get the initial deposit and everything else. So in other words, it's going to be a couple of months before we get into the environmental review on a project like this. But you're right, Bob. That's the hardest part, is that you don't want to overspend the developer's money on things, but in some cases you just don't know what it's going to take to serve them.
Definitely need to protect ourselves, that's for sure. And I think there's supposed to be a theater or something like that in this development, and that brings another element to the whole project. How tall is the building? How are we going to ladder that building?
No, fire it's an outside theater. It's not an indoor.
Oh, okay. So it's like an amphitheater.
A drive-in.
Oh, okay. I see. But there's all those things to consider,
Yeah, it's and I think they're gonna, the project itself is gonna run into a lot of requirements through Caltrans, as much as ours. The dilemma that we have with that piece of property, is number one, we don't have adequate fire flow either in storage. Water storage or in main capacity. And so the project that has the CDBG application would have addressed that main capacity issue, because it upsizes and replaces that pipeline.
The one that we're just going, the one we're planning on replacing now?
Yeah, the one that the pipeline that is in place is too small. The one that we have designed to go in there is adequate for fire flow. And to meet the demand of the area. It's not designed for this project, but it's designed considering that's commercial zoning and that there's going to be a demand on that property. And The problem is because the CDBG funding did not happen this year, it's going to roll over to next year, hopefully. And that means that that project's not going to be done. If they're going to develop the project, they're going to have to build that main at their expense, or commit to it at least, because we can't say we're waiting for CDBG, you know, and so they're, it's going to, that alone could throw a wrench in this project. But we'll see. We just can't get, you know, we can't get a funding agreement quick enough. So good. Ronnie, did you have a question?
Yeah, I just have a quick question about the CBDG. Is that a guarantee that they would submit our project next year? Since no. It's not a guarantee. No. So we have to go through that process again to ask them to consider it.
They're required to have a public process to request request needs in the community.
Okay.
I expect we'll be competing with Jamestown, Tuolumne City, and TUD again.
Okay.
But their projects are going to be ready to proceed this time where they weren't last time. So it's going to be tougher competition, and it's going to be, it could be politically motivated, if you know what I mean. Because we're pushing on a lot of different fronts right now.
Right.
John? Ronnie? Yeah, John?
So if the developer had to pay for the infrastructure to, you know, get the water supply adequate, then as other developments developed, would they pay that developer back? And is that Melrose, right?
No. The Melrose is a separate discussion, but I'll touch on that. But there's a reimbursement agreement that happens. It's typically a 10-year period of time after the project is completed and accepted. The district would get all of the cost information from the developer on what that asset costs and what demands it could serve. And then you create an area on the map that then for that 10-year period, the connection fees for those other benefiting parcels funnel into the district and then paid back to the developer, a portion of it. So they do get, you know, they can get reimbursed quite a bit of the money if there's a lot of development. If there's nothing, they'll get zero. It's really, it's kind of a risky proposition. But sometimes when the water main is there, you see the development happen fairly quickly, you know. But you're correct on that. The Melrose, there is certainly an option for them to create either a community facilities district as a condition of this, and then pay it back, you know, get a loan. We would get a loan for the infrastructure, and then the assessments on the property going forward would pay the principal and interest and administration on that loan. But basically we're financing it on behalf of the developer at that point. It's cheaper financing for them because it's a tax exempt bond. So they, you know, it's typically a pretty good investment, but again, it just sucks up our resources too, our time and legal and effort and, you know, and then we get accused of financing projects for people, even though they, you know, the dilemma is if the development doesn't work out well and they can't pay their taxes, we, you know, our options are to own a piece of property and then sell it.
Spencer?
Yeah, I heard you say resources several times. Are we able to manage this? I mean, I wouldn't say manage, but, you know, this is a big deal. I mean, it's going to suck up a lot of time out of year routine, Jen's, Louie's, and I'm concerned about that.
You need a project coordinator?
Project manager or something like that. Coming from that business as a project manager, you know, it's a guy who comes in, works for three or four years for Dell Computers as a project manager, and I had their interest in mind, and I did everything for them to keep the project running the way they wanted it run. Do you need somebody like that, Pete?
We'll probably do that. The answer is yes. We'll do that through our district engineer, and have them handle the project. We'll hand it off to them. You know, there will be some site investigation to confirm certain things because our maps aren't accurate and all that. But in a case like this, that will be part of the cost. I will ask Alfonso in this first step to estimate what do you estimate your expenses to be to manage this project, so that, you know, basically all we're doing is we're gathering information and checking boxes so that I can recommend to the board at a future date that we're done and ready to go, ready to accept it. So yeah, that's a given.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
If you have more staff expense, it's certainly more cost effective for us to do it internally. If we had that development review team, or, you know, TUD had engineers on staff and one of them was kind of the dedicated development person. But that is, it's not possible for us. You know, we don't have that capability to do it internally. And it only saves the developer. It doesn't save us anything, really. It's going to cost a developer more money to pay the engineering wages to manage the project that in some cases could have been managed by us. Is it going to kill projects? I don't think so. Maybe the little mom and pop, good idea thing that just barely has enough money to get it off the ground, but bigger projects, it shouldn't.
Spencer.
Just to continue on, did I interrupt somebody?
Spencer,
you've spoken with the project proponent. What's your feeling about these guys? Do they have, are they ready to follow this through? I mean, nobody is more prone to development in Groveland than I am, in Big Oak Flat and Pine Mountain Lake, all Merrill Road, White Skulls, all of it. Are they going to finish this, Pete? What's your gut feeling on that?
Yeah, they will if it's financially feasible. They think it's financially feasible, or they wouldn't be in the position that they are. They've been working on this for over a year. I've had quite a few conversations with them, but we never, you know, we're getting ready to jump in pretty deep, and this is where they're going to really see the numbers. They weren't able to provide me enough information for me to be able to tell them yes or no and how, you know. It just wasn't there. So they jumped in, they got the zoning, they're ready to go. They have recently done projects on the 140 corridor. They've got a project under construction in Avila Beach.
I used to live there.
Yeah, it's that the old little tiny RV park by the entrance to the power plant. Now 4 or 5 terraces high and hundreds of spaces, and you know, it's now has these park model units going in. So they know what they're doing. I think this is an extremely viable project given the market right now, just like we've talked about with an RV park. But I think they'll go as long as the infrastructure, Caltrans and us, as a fairly reasonable number, they'll go.
I'd like to chime in with John, his concerns about our fire department and this development. I think those are valid. I remember at one point when I was a firefighter, the fire chief talking about a development on the SCAR and a ladder truck, John, you know, because of some of the buildings that were there. I think that's a very valid point that you brought up. And I'm chiming in with you on that, John.
Bob.
I think we got to watch all aspects, and even the park. If there's more people there, maybe they'll go to the park.
Bob.
We should have had a ladder truck for Rush Creek. I mean, seriously.
Bob would like, he had his hand raised. Let him speak, please.
Thank you, guys.
I was waving off so that Spence could speak, but I had a specific question, which is, I mean, are these guys aware of the fact that we might not actually have the fire flow accomplished, not necessarily even next year? I mean, that's a real, if they really want to make this project happen, they're going to have to put up a tank. I mean, I think if they wanted to have a control over the time.
Yeah, the thing that makes me a little bit nervous is they were trying to get information about that adjacent development project where they put in that junky water tank. And that was for a different project that was, I don't know if it was close to the cemetery, what it was, but, anyway, if you look on Google Earth, you can see this, what looks like a flying saucer in the trees. They built a used junky tank up there. And I think they were going to hold, gray water or storm water runoff or something for a different project, not on the SCAR. But these guys are looking at that like that's some kind of answer for water storage, and it is not going to meet potable water standards. There's nothing they could do to it to make it meet potable water standards other than, probably put a couple $100,000 into testing and then, another $750,000 into coatings and fabrication and land acquisition and easements and. So anyway, yeah, do they know? Yeah, I think every developer thinks that all of these things are negotiable. Okay, that they do understand that there's fire flow issues and fire water storage issues, but it didn't deter them from submitting an application. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. And so not to get
it's
into
their money. Okay.
Yeah. Specifics on that
it's their,
project.
Their money.
Talk a little bit more as we get that agreement specific to that project. This was more of a general, create an understanding among the board that we have policies that we follow, that we're not in it for the profit, that we make sure they cover all their own costs, that we don't deny service to anyone within the district boundaries. It's always service at a cost. We can deny it if there's just no way to provide it, but we're formed to try to find a way to provide it.
I have a question. If they have to put in larger and all new stuff to provide the additional flow to their location, and then anybody between us and them that wanted to put in something new could latch into it. Mm-hmm. How does this piping work? Do they, when they add larger pipe down there, how many more hundreds of people is it going to feed, or how many more, you know what I mean?
Well, when you design it, you look at the fire flow requirements, mm-hmm. In general, what size pipeline does it take in that location at that pressure to be able to operate fire hydrants at a standard? And then how much, what is the development potential that can be served by that pipeline within a reasonable period of time? Mm-hmm. You don't want to just put in this 12-inch main when you really only need an 8-inch main, because then you've got a lot of extra water in those pipes that go bad. It doesn't move through fast enough, so it sits in there and it has to be flushed out. So there's a real challenge to it. And now you don't typically even put in a water main less than 8 inches in diameter. It used to be 4 and 6 inches was normal. That's a 4-inch line, I believe there. But it'll be an 8-inch line. And the only time that 8-inch diameter line is really needed is for fire flow. So for just meeting irrigation and toilets and restaurants and, gas stations and homes and that kind of stuff, that's a lot of water that'll go through that 8-inch main. It's just when you turn on that hydrant at the same time.
Yeah. Okay, now what about the sewer end of it? Do they have to add infrastructure to the sewer portion?
We have to do a capacity analysis on the pipeline that goes from that location to the treatment plant. The alternatives are that it would either flow, that particular location would either gravity feed back to lift station 16 in Big Oak Flat, or it would have a lift station that pumped up to the breakover point at the divide, down the railroad easement. So they'd have a pressure line that went out of that. And then anyway, so you got to evaluate all the capacities of the system. We don't know right now, but no matter what, they're going to have a fairly long sewer pipeline to go somewhere.
Okay. And then what about the treatment plant?
Treatment plant, for the most part, we've got a significant amount of capacity. They have to purchase that capacity in terms of, connection capacity fees, but so that we can in the future build more capacity into the system. You never want to get up against that, we're completely built out situation. But they wouldn't have to make immediate improvements in just the first look. Because of the water conservation, reduced the amount of sewage production, so that capacity has been freed up.
Okay, thank you. Yes, John?
So given that it's gonna be a fairly large RV park, is there any extra processing or treatment that has to be done? Because I know that, the RV is going to have chemicals in there and all that, and that's all going to be coming back to the plant. Is that going to change anything at all?
The development on this location. I'm going to probably step away from talking about specifics for the project because this agenda was more general. I don't know. That's one thing that we do in this sub-area master plan is you look at what the what the nature of the sewage is, how much, because sometimes you'll have an on-site holding system so that it'll hold it on site and to hold the peaks. And then you meter it out at, 20 gallons a minute or something, instead of fill up the wet well and then push it, all of it. So there's engineering that has to be done there to determine how that all functions and whether it'll cause a problem with treatment. So that comes in the next step during the environmental review and design of the project. So anyway, I not to belabor this, we're all over it. I've been through this dozens of times from all, small and large projects, and feel pretty confident in handling this one and okay. Spencer's waving.
Yes.
I have one question, and it's for Ronnie. What does the public know about this, and what do they think about it, ma'am?
I know that the limited amount of information and feedback that I've gotten just indicates they don't know much. And there is a certain group that's really angry that it could make things stinkier at Tannehill. Mm-hmm. And so trying to convey that the treatment plant has significant, we're okay to cover another development. They don't need to do immediate improvements to our existing treatment facility confuses them. So I'm gonna work real hard to make them understand that just because things get stinky in the summer because of high usage, Pete and I are going to work together on this. The frustrating thing is the people that are vocal seem to be very confused and have misinformation, and they share it. So it's more of the kind of getting ahead of the curve. And I'll be doing a great big piece on this meeting today, this workshop, to talk about all of that. That's my understanding. hopefully there will be more people who understand the process and understand how things work that are chiming in. I've been talking to people like Brett Brudeau and some other upstanding, I hate using that word, but people that have a positive light in the community or seen in positive light in the community, and also proponents of the district. And I've been asking them to chime in a bit, share some of our things to kind of get more backup on, hey, they're doing great work. Mm-hmm. And I have three responses from people that they're like, yeah, we're on your team and happy to share your info. So that's good.
Thank you, Ronnie.
Okay. So we're done with item four. Now we're going to go to the discussion and action items. 5A, the presentation of the first quarter 2020-2021 fiscal year financial statement.
Okay, so as you will have noticed, the quarterly financial statements memo and the statements themselves are a little different, as well as having some added additions to this report. I took the board direction and input from our last meeting regarding these quarterly financial statements and incorporated them in, specifically with adding the sewer project loan as a separate line item in the sewer fund, as well as breaking out the capital a little bit more. The board had wanted at the last meeting to see like the major capital and then to have every other capital for the much smaller items. And when I was developing this, it just seemed a little clunky to me. And I just figured it would be easier to add the year-to-date capital next to what was budgeted, so the board could just see everything as what was in currently in progress for the capital. So hopefully that was a little bit easier, or hopefully it accomplished what the board wanted as far as seeing progress with capital projects. So I'm going to go over, instead of going through like I usually do where we're looking at the financial statement and I have the notes, you'll notice I removed the notes from the bottom of the spreadsheets because they were redundant, and this way I could make them bigger to be able to see better. And the narrative really, you know, talks about what is reflected on those statements. So instead of going through the actual Excel sheets themselves, I'm going to go through the memo, because the memo is what, you know, supports and highlights what you're seeing as far as numbers. If at some point you want me to go back to the sheet for something specific, just stop me and we can do that. But as far as I'm considered, like, or as far as it's, I think that this memo pretty much highlights everything that would be relevant from those statements. So just starting with the water fund, our revenue is, the fixed rates are on track, and our variable rates are exceeding the budgeted figure by 21%. And then we also have $6,450 in earned interest from the district's LAIF accounts. We do believe that the higher revenue is, well, one, we've definitely used more water. But we also have the high summer months that fall within the first quarter. So we've got July, August specifically, but September, which are hot months. So generally, we're always over budget at this time, in this first quarter. The overall district expenses for the water fund are on track. Leases will be over budget. As you will see there, we were trying to get out of the remaining lease balance on our Avaya phone system because the company went bankrupt. We couldn't use it anymore. It became a useless phone, but the company that held the lease would not let us out of that, and it was going to be reflected negatively on the district's credit rating. So we went ahead and paid that off, and I think it was around like $11,200 is what we ended up, yeah. And we fought it, but it was just an unfortunate situation. They were the ones holding the equipment. We were responsible for the equipment, but the software went down. So it was just an unfortunate situation, but we didn't want to have anything negatively affected for our credit rating. So we went ahead and paid off that Avaya phone system. The cost of water, which is the what we pay San Francisco Public Utilities, commissioned for is currently 14% over budget. Again, the district experiences higher water consumption in the first quarter. But as the memo states, we did cross-reference, and consumption is up approximately 3 million gallons this quarter than it was last quarter from SFPUC. So again, it could be COVID-related with the increase of people into the community. We've also got George Reed, who's been pulling off of our flow meters for the Highway 120 construction work. And there has been a lot more frequent line flushing. Go ahead, Janice.
Are we reimbursed by the George Reed company for any water they're using?
Oh, yeah. So we have, it's a flow meter program, and they pay, I believe it's $5 a day, and then they pay the peak rate consumption for every gallon that they use.
Okay.
So, yes.
And then are we on a tiered system with Hetch Hetchy? Or do we get all the water we want at a certain price, or is it?
No, Louie would know. He's the one that looks at those bills in detail, and I know that he's on here. I believe it's one rate.
You're correct. It's just one rate.
Okay, cool.
Okay, moving to capital outlay for the first quarter in the water fund, we had the that big software upgrade to our new server, and there's $20,911 in the water fund for their share of that cost. $18,000 for the initial deposit for the new tank 4 generator. That's the one we were reimbursed by the county for $18,000 for that. There will be Lou, do you know what the remaining balance of that is that is going to be the district's responsibility?
Oh, I want to say it was total of 56,000. So I'd have to double check. Let me do that real quick.
Okay.
Come back here shortly.
We have $15,346 in engineering fees for the Big Creek Second Garrote Clearwell project that's been grant funded. That's represented in there. And then the $12,279 for the fund share for that Honda utility vehicle that was purchased to access off-road district properties, including water and sewer easements for line inspections. So if you look after that, I've included the water capital outlay. So it's taken exactly from what our budget is. There are things that were unbudgeted though that have been put against capital. So you'll see at the bottom that I have unbudgeted items. And again, the Honda UTV was brought to the board for approval, but it was originally an unbudgeted item when the budget was approved. So that is year to date. Well, not year to date, the first quarter capital for water.
Did we amend the budget for the Honda?
We will bring the mid-year budget adjustments to the board, but we will get it approved, and then we'll have a list to do one fell swoop of all the adjustments, which will encompass a lot of the things that we bring.
Okay.
I'm going to move on to sewer, unless there's any questions. Okay. So again, fixed rates are on track, and the variable are exceeding the budget by 13%. We had one new sewer connection in the last quarter, which was $7,125 in other revenue. And then we've got $4,477 in earned interest from the district's LAIF account. Again, the district's overall expenses are on track. The Avaya lease was also shared to the sewer fund, so that will, the leases line item will go over budget because of that. And then at the last workshop, the board had directed that they would like a line item separating out the sewer improvement project loan principal and interest expense. So that has been added to the sheet. And then you will also know the PERS unfunded accrued liability. That's a one-time payment. So even though it shows there's 3% left, there's nothing else that will get put towards that line item for the rest of the year. And that 3% represents the cost savings to the district for paying that in one lump sum. For capital outlay, we have the $13,082 fund share expense for the software upgrade. The $21,340 for the skate park manhole project repair, and that project has been completed. $3,500 for the new sewer treatment plant blower. $3,265 for the new flow meter for Pine Mountain Lake Mixing Pond, which is required to calculate the mixture of district reclaimed water and lake water for the golf course, for watering the golf course. And then the fund share for the Honda utility vehicle that was purchased.
Real quick, I don't know if Louie's back or not. The skate park manhole repair project. Did we have to do that because of the water flow coming in from the highway project right across the street?
No, that was just a filled manhole that had like a stub out that we weren't using, and that section of the manhole failed, and it was leaking groundwater into the manhole and allowing material to get in there every time they flush it as well. So,
okay. Wow, that's a lot. And then what is this smart cover system? 26.
That is remote monitoring for our sewer system.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So we'll actually, these things will be attached to the manhole lid covers, and it will monitor flow and any kind of level increases in those manholes. That way it will actually page cell phones. So,
wow, cool.
But the cool thing is it's flow monitoring, so it can actually monitor it all year long, and we can see if we have any kind of INI problems. And these things are movable, so we can move them around our system.
What's an INI problem?
Inflow and infiltration from water. So usually when during like rain events or something, it will inflow to our pipes.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Oh, and I did send Jen, but it's going to be $38,140 remaining for the tank 4 generator.
Thank you, Lou.
You're welcome.
Okay, moving into the fire fund. So not, you know, a whole lot going on yet as far as revenue expenses for the fire fund. We've just had a really small disbursement check from the county. We received the large ones in December and April. We have $3,300 in other non-operating revenue for the grant from the state of California for the purchase of new turnouts, and we've earned $1,800 in interest from the district's LAFE account. The district hasn't received an invoice from CAL FIRE yet. We were supposed to receive it, I believe, in the 19th of October, but the district has not received that yet. And we have, so other operating expenses up, that's because we have $13,200 in legal fees. So there's been a lot of work with all the stuff that Pete's been talking about with the county and the fire tax and the JPA and all of that stuff has been going to against the fire fund for legal fees. So we've got that represented in other operating expense. We've also got $9,500 to SCI Consulting for our fire. Yep, Bob?
Just a point we get, if the county is going to cover our Amador expenses, are they going to pay that directly, or is it going to, is it going to come in as a transfer to us and then we pay the bill, or I'm just curious?
The agreement is on our agenda for the November board meeting. And basically adopting and approving a new agreement that takes the Amador off of our agreement, and the county at the same time is going to take action to add it to theirs. So it'll be billed directly.
We'll just do a budget adjustment to remove the Amador expense. Okay. Yep.
Cool.
And then we have $8,500 in apparatus repair work, or the expenses for the fire fund. Capital outlay first quarter, we've got the fund share expense for the software upgrade, and then we had the big thing, which was the $59,228 for the building upgrades that we have. So this was not budgeted in this current fiscal year. It was budgeted in last current fiscal year, and we had projected that this work was going to be completed by the end of last fiscal year, and it wasn't. So there was no funds expended last fiscal year, so this will end up being a budget adjustment for this year, but it was already budgeted for, not used in the previous fiscal year. And as we know, that work has been completed, and the fire department looks
beautiful.
Fabulous. Parks fund revenue, same thing, small check. Other operating revenue includes $25,300 from PG&E for the purchase of the two easements for the PIH, the pre-installed interconnection hub that's going to go there to power downtown Groveland, Big Oak, or downtown businesses in downtown Groveland, not Big Oak Flat, when we experience PSPSs. And $13,428 in cell tower rents and $577 in earned interest from the district's LAIF account. And utilities are up as a result of the higher water bills, the district water bills. And the first quarter has $278 big dollars from its share for the software upgrade to the server. If nobody has any questions on that specifically, or are we going to go over the numbers specifically on the spreadsheet, I was going to move to the graph that then the couple of new sheets that you see there. Okay, I'm not seeing anything. So if we wanted to scroll, or I'm scrolling, I don't know what you guys are doing. Go to the fund quarterly balance bar graph that's been added. So this is reflective of last fiscal year quarterly fund balances. So the sheet that you see prior, which is our quarterly balance cash position sheet that Pete signs off every quarter saying that we're in compliance and that we have enough money to keep operating the district. So this shows for the water, sewer, fire, and park fund, the first, second, third, and fourth quarter of last fiscal year, as well as the first quarter for this current fiscal year. So you can see how the fluctuation in the fund balances and net position for each. Pete, I don't know if you wanna.
Yeah, just so that we have clarity here, because we're going to keep this going forward so that you can see the overall financial health of the district. This is pretty much a snapshot picture of our cash. So, for example, if you look at the water fund, a year ago, we had $4.421 million available in fund balance. And so at the end of the first quarter for this year, we have 4.613. So in addition to making the capital investments that we did over the last year and funding our operation, we were able to continue to increase our cash available. The same goes with sewer. A large jump there in the balances. Some of that due to money that we had in a restricted reserve that came available that when we refinanced the bonds. So that it came out of our restricted and went into the fund balance. So that is a good sign to see that increasing, since we're doing a lot of projects as well. When you look at fire, that's the concerning number. It's the number that we predicted. However, we are not as far down as we thought we would be, but we don't like to be going in that direction, going from 1.13 million to 784,000 in that fund balance. It's the wrong direction. If you drew a trend line, you're only a couple years out, depending on what the expenses are. But parks, amazingly, we have been staying fairly flat there and not spending our cash that we have available in the park fund. And so that's a number I'm not as concerned about anymore. I'm always concerned, but we'd love to have more money in that fund. But for now, it's not the high priority. It's the fire fund. And it's a great picture for our public to show that we're doing millions of dollars in improvements and at the same time continuing to build reserve cash.
I have a question, Jen. Why does the county, people pay their property tax twice a year. Why does the county give us big amounts twice a year and then little amounts? Why don't they give it all to us?
You know, Janice, we've asked that. We really don't know. If they send us, there's not a real description. They'll say miscellaneous, you know, and trying to get anybody at the county to understand or to even to explain that to us, we've been unsuccessful in the past.
And it's for sure property tax funds that they're giving to us?
I would, Deb, are you on the line? Deb was going to join this just because in case there was anything.
Yeah, I'm here. It's just mostly out of the general fund, and they don't really give an explanation for the smaller checks other than like an appropriation number or a railroad tax or timber tax or, you know, it's various little items, but the twice a year is the majority one, but the little ones are just various descriptions.
Okay, and we put it in fire because
they go into both. It's because it's just it's all the ad valorem taxes that we receive, and the taxes from the county go distributed between those two funds because they're not enterprise funds.
Right. Okay. I just didn't know if it says miscellaneous, where's it supposed to go? Is it
it's ad valorem? The only thing we receive from them is
numbers, like different appropriation numbers and kind of things like that.
Okay. Thank you, Deb.
Sure.
Go ahead, Spence. I see you.
My question is, and it reverts back to what we were first discussing Yonder Yosemite and an RV park. There will be a transient occupancy tax, TOT. Will that apply to people who stay there? And will that TOT come to GCSD, or will it have to go through Tuolumne County for processing and then back to us? Does anyone know how that's going to work?
I know that we do not levy the TOT. The county levies the TOT. Whether it applies to that particular use at this time, I don't know. Whether Measure U, if it passes, affects that, I don't know, other than the change in rate. But there is no, the nature of a TOT is that it's a general tax, and that is a tax that can be used by the county for any general fund purpose. And the county has budget allocations for certain things. For example, they give money back to the Visitors Bureau and those kind of things to promote business. There's no money that funnels back from the TOT at this time to GCSD. However, we've had conversations about it. It's still in the works. And that was one of the reasons that we took a position on Measure U, was that there's been discussions with county administration that because 40% of the TOT is generated on the 120 corridor, that it's logical that some of that would go back to GCSD for fire and obviously to help fund law enforcement in that.
Sir.
Ronnie, were you going to add something to that too? Okay.
Well, I like this, Jennifer. I really like this.
It was actually Pete's direction to have me create it, but I did make it. It took me a little bit to kind of go back in my wheelhouse of remembering how to make graphs from Excel. So he was really challenging me with this.
I'm a visual learner. This is good.
Yeah. I think it's, we're trying to always make these a little bit more useful or a little bit, I don't know, just taking some rather than numbers and making it more meaningful, I guess. And so visuals really help, and summarizing things really seem to help. So I'm glad that we're getting positive feedback. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing you will see, I'm definitely going to let Pete explain this, the infrastructure and equipment reserve summary report. He worked with Gilbert, our CPA that we contract with, to develop this sheet. So I will let him go ahead and explain this to the board.
One thing that I'm continually asked is, you said when you increased rates that you were going to build certain projects and that you were going to put money in reserve. And up until this year, I've understood it. We've had it in the budget, but there was no specific report that we did that showed that designation. It's not, understand that this is not a board-acted restricted fund, because you don't want to restrict your cash for specified projects unless it's required by a loan or something else. So this report is about a designated reserve. We designated it in the rate increase documentation that we were going to, when we did the water rate increase, that first column, it started out at $450,000 a year that was dedicated to a specified list of projects. Mm-hmm. And that increased by an inflator each year, a CPI inflator, through 2019-20, where it topped out at $506,479. So those years and the amount of money going into that designated reserve is shown in that first column. Then you have, and I'm just on the water column, the very first column there. So you have capital expenditures over the years that we've made since 2015-16 that are then deducted from that amount of cash. And as you can see, we spent more in capital projects that were fixed assets and equipment than we brought in that designated fund. Mm-hmm. However, a big chunk of grant was also received, the $1.224613 million. So in reality, the net effect is that we actually carried over $804,000 in that designated reserve because of the grant. We still did $2.8 million worth of projects. Mm-hmm. So anyway, and that was a project that we got payment for. I believe it was the AWS or the other water treatment plant. I don't even know what we call it. The portable water plant. Yeah. So on the sewer column, this was, we had a designated annual capital outlay. We said we're going to put $300,000 a year into equipment and infrastructure replacement. In each budget year, we would spend an amount of money up to $300,000 or more if we had the funding for capital projects and equipment. And then we actually spent $995,000. We did receive some grant money, primarily related to the flume that was done during that period of time. So we carried over $173,000. And got almost $1 million worth of projects done. So that is a good way to look at that as well. One other thing that we did on the sewer fund that was, we didn't actually talk about the specific designation for the extra reserve. There was $300,000 a year that we talked about going into capital projects on a budgetary annual basis. And then we talked about $100,000 going into a reserve. We didn't talk about how that reserve is going to be spent because we knew we were going to do the master plan. And then after the master plan, we'd know how much we need out into the future. Okay, so we wanted to get a start on it with this rate increase. We did. So there's really no expenditures out of that. So that $200,000 also accumulated in that fund balance in this designated reserve. So these amounts of money, the $804,000 in water, and the $173,000 plus $200,000 in sewer are designated capital outlay money. You'll see that weave into the budget in the future so that you know how much we're planning to draw down from this. And you'll be able to see this report on a quarterly basis and know how that number is coming out. And again, this is important when you go to think about rate increases, because when you see that if your reserves that you're setting aside actually are based on an engineering calculation, which they will be when the master plan is done, you know exactly how much money you need to be putting away and spending. And then if you're covering your operating cost with your rates and you're covering your reserve and you have a contingency, your rate increases are minimal. You know, if anything, they just cover the cost of living. That's where you want that balance to be, is where your rates cover your operating cost, your capital needs, and reserves. So I think we're doing great. Hopefully this was clear why these were established and accounted for this way. It took me a month to get through, because we just didn't have these things set up in that way. Deb did a great job helping me with Gilbert and Associates to put this together.
A great transparency document.
Yes.
For the customers that are concerned about rate increases and want to, we don't hear that we're squandering money anymore. I mean, this is really great. And Bob, over the years, I've grown to appreciate your consideration on things like this. What do you think? If it's okay by the Brown Act for me to ask that, I mean, I've grown to appreciate.
Of course, but it's an open meeting. You can say anything in an open meeting. I think this is really good. I just, for those of you who weren't here at the time, the alternative water thing that Pete was referring to, which was the $1.2 million grant, and that also was $1.2 million of the $2.8 million we spent on water. That is the filtration trailer that's up by Second Garrote, if y'all have been up there. It's good we got it. That got put in because San Francisco said, hey, we're going to sometimes start sending water down from Cherry Lake rather than from Hetch Hetchy. And we have a filtration avoidance, is that it? Or whatever the proper term is. Yes. For stuff from raw water from Hetch Hetchy, we don't have to filter it because it's so pure. That is not the case of the water that comes from Cherry Lake. What turned out to be the case, I guess, is the water from Cherry Lake was so bad that even the Hetch Hetchy plant or the San Francisco plant in Sunol couldn't filter it. And so they've never actually done that. So I hate to say it, but that's, while it's nice to have that thing up there, it's really just kind of a white elephant in a way. But we had to do it. There was no alternative. They said, you know, you have to be ready to receive muddy water. And so we are. And that's, I mean, in case everybody was, those of you who may not have been here through the, through that.
Thank you, Bob.
Maybe there's some revenue potential in the elephant there, Bob. Maybe we can rent it out for people that have failures in their systems. And,
it's in a trailer, I guess.
It's not super portable, but I believe we could make it super portable. And there are a lot of needs, especially when somebody's, for example, when TUD has a ditch outage, they've got to do some weird stuff. And when they have to rebuild a treatment plant, sometimes there's real logistic that goes on, and this would be a very cost-effective way to deal with it. Anyway.
We did actually get a pretty good deal on it. As it turned out, Powell sort of had this one sitting around that they hadn't managed to sell, and so we got a pretty good deal on it.
Maybe we can get it to pay for itself somewhat.
Yeah. Well, the grant paid for most of it.
Yeah.
We're not really out any money. The grant covered almost all the expense.
Yeah.
Because it was an emergency situation for us.
Didn't we have to modify it too? I think we modify that trailer? I thought we did.
Well, there's some things we had to put up. No, we had to put up a backflow pit. I mean, it wasn't modifications to the trailer itself, but we did have to do a bunch of modifications to Second Garrote. Louis can undoubtedly tell us about that in detail if you want to know.
So does this, for those that were around for the water rate increase hearing and development of that. Does this seem to be consistent with your understanding of these reserves as being designated for capital equipment replacement?
Speaking as one of the people that was involved in that, I'm afraid we might have used the term restricted reserve a couple of times verbally, but I think that this actually achieves the objective that we were promising. So I mean, it is a designated reserve, it's identifiable, and I agree with the idea that probably a restricted reserve, we were so much younger then and just throw.
If you just took the action as part of your rate increase proceedings and all of that, if you didn't have a specific separate resolution that declared it a certain amount of money restricted and talked about the terms and conditions of that restriction and specifically what it was for, then it was just terminology.
We never took action to make a restricted reserve, but I believe in the early discussion of this, when we were telling people about it, we may have used the term restricted reserve, but I think that this designated reserve achieves the same result. I think that's fine.
It's if you can think about it from a manager's perspective, it's restricted. You know, it is my guidebook for developing budgets and capital project funding. From the board's perspective, it's been designated. So anyway, yeah, we'll need to make that clear in our outreach on this, because I think this is a really important thing to say, that we're doing what we said we would do with both the water and sewer reserve money designated reserves for capital outlay. People like to see it going into projects. And I'll tell you, you know, if you look at the grants here, wait till you see next year's. There's the numbers, the net position of the district is over the next 5 years is going to go through the roof. Just because we're, you know, anyway, getting a lot of grant money.
I will say, when we were doing this originally, I know that we may have been using the terminology restricted, but we knew that the board couldn't restrict the money, because a board in the future could come and say, no, we're not using. So we had that discussion plenty. Like, the only restricted money we could have would be like for our debt service at the board. Like, we could not do anything else with. So like Bob said,
Yeah,
but I know we had the discussion that these could not be actually restricted.
Well, actually, we could have. There is such a thing as a restricted reserve, but it's still overridable by five out of five vote by a future board. So it's not really
restricted.
It's just obstructed.
So we have 1 year of the high rate increase. Is that correct?
No, for sewer?
Yeah.
We did, this year was the 15%, and then the next 2 years it goes 3%, I believe, right, Rachel? Yeah. This is the last
year. Really? Okay. Because that's not what Griefer quoted in the budget meeting last week. And I didn't hear. I couldn't.
Well, the first rate increase was when we implemented the rate increase, and then there were two more high rate increases. Have we had both of them already? God, time flies.
We just implemented the 15% increase at the beginning of the fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So was it two 15%? What was the first one?
It was 17%, 17%, 15%, and then 3 and 3.
Okay. Okay, cool. Very cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Ronnie, any comments on this?
The presentations keep getting better and better. The narrative is just absolutely the right way to go. I know it takes a little bit of time to put that together, but it makes it a lot more intelligible when we're running through it rather than trying to read the, I mean, we can read the spreadsheet on our own time, but having the explanation.
It's a lot easier to follow. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
all involved.
lot better than when I first got on the board. A lot better.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting to share the board, the district's doing what they said they're going to do with these rate increases. Here's what you can look at. I also want to be able to share the recorded meeting so people can put it on when they're ironing their shirts or whatever that weren't excited about joining us today. But this is exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's thinking about the future.
Yes. Can we take just a few minute break between this and when we start our management objectives?
Mm-hmm.
Is that possible?
I'm done unless anybody has anything else, then we can take that break.
Anybody?
Yeah, I'd just like to say well done, Jen. Well done.
Yeah.
It's a good effort, but thank you.
Yes.
Very good. Like everybody else said, very, very much easier to just kind of follow rather than flipping back and forth between different sheets and stuff. Good job.
Very usable. Good work.
Good job. Okay, so we're going to take just like a 3-minute break. Anybody need to stretch your legs, get a cup of coffee, put some socks on their feet. Thank you. I'll resume. Okay, item number 5B, review and update of the 2020-2022 management objectives, which identify management actions intended to accomplish the goals of the goals of the board of directors.
Okay, thank me. I'm unmuted. I have a really pretty yellow hue. Is what the camera looks like to me.
You have a real pretty what?
Yellow. Gorgeous
yes.
hue.
Yes. About,
I
you
don't
look beyond to see.
Glowing, is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Kind of just goes with your Parisian background look in that picture.
Yeah, I have the feeling it's that I have so many different colored monitors, it's messing with the light here. So this is again, this is an activity that is designed to make sure that the board and management are aligned in our thoughts and in our approach to our goals and objectives, that we have a plan for the future, and that we have an understanding, so that when you see me on the street doing things or hear about this and that going on, that there's no surprise. This is not looking for individual decisions and direction on each and every one of these overwhelming number of lines within this charter, this table. But again, the intent is just so that I provide enough information so that there's clarity on where the heck we're going, because everything that I do or take on as an initiative or an action or a project or whatever affects every single person throughout the organization in some way. It consumes their time and effort and energy. And so we want to make sure always that we're aligned. One of the things that we set forward in the very beginning was that we wanted to make sure that we had an excellent employment culture, that we were able to attract and retain employees. And we've taken a number of actions along the way to make sure that we could do that. And this first section of this report is basically just a snapshot picture of the things that we are doing that are keeping this in motion, that we're working toward that goal. And a lot of these have been kicked off to a consultant. We're headed toward somewhat of an organizational evaluation through this consultant contract. It's been kind of an evolving scope of work. And the reason that I say that is because we continue to have a high rate of turnover And it's not necessarily people disgruntled with the pay or benefits or the working environment. Some of them have been just normal personnel actions where the relationship didn't work out. Others have been people just wanting to pursue their a different career, a different dream. And the employment market is interesting because we're casting a net out there a long way, but we're not necessarily getting the candidate pool that we think we should get. We are getting good candidates, and when we have, for example, we've recently gone to fill a couple positions that came available. We feel that we have good candidates, but we're not attracting people from other utilities that have the skills and experience that can be just plugged right into a certificated position as a certified water distribution or wastewater collection operator. And that's just always been the nature in Groveland. We don't offer anything that is so above and beyond everybody else that, other than the wonderful people that we are, that people are running to be part of this district yet. So a couple of things that we want to look at in this evaluation with the consultant, and that being, we want to look a little bit at the meter reading position. It feels like a temporary position just because it's not something that people really like to do. It's not a separate position at this point. It's part of the duties of being a distribution collection operator. You're just assigned that meter reading position. And we're also looking at transitioning to a different type of technology that's not going to take that same, hands-on skill set of reading, manually reading meters. That adds a little bit to the, if we're not getting the certified people, are we going to have any trouble attracting and retaining a separate meter reader, or do we continue the way that we are? So when we're looking at these job descriptions through this consultant, we really need to step back and look at, are we asking too much of employees to be multiple certified and do all of these different things? Should we even have an expectation that we can attract anyone like that? Because that drives our salaries and benefits and programs. And we're also having some difficulty with on-call stuff, just being able to make sure that everyone knows that they can't move away to Oakdale and still be able to respond on call and get to Groveland in a timely manner. It's limiting, we're limiting people to living in Groveland or close enough in that they can respond within an adequate time to deal with emergencies. So I threw a lot out there. I'm not asking for any specific direction at this point. I just want to let you know that these are all coming together in a kind of a holistic look at what we're doing with our employees. We have not interviewed a consultant yet to finalize that work scope. Any input on that at this point? Does that feel right that we're going in the right direction to continue to look?
Yeah, I think so. Are we talking about all of item one?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there's a piece of item one talking about the succession plan for Deb's position.
That's item two.
We're gonna attempt that internally, but it does fit in well with the overall organizational evaluation, because we don't know you still have to have certain skills internally, even if we farmed out to a third party firm that accounts payable, accounts receivable stuff, payroll, even if it was just payroll and accounts payable, there's still a skill set that has to occur internally to support Jennifer's work. It doesn't all land on her.
No, you still have to gather everything and ship it off to the payroll company or the accounts receivable company or whatever. So somebody in the office has to have the knowledge. When I saw that you were thinking about outsourcing that, I thought, whoa, wait a minute. Okay. So yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah. Are we able to fit what's remaining of some of those technical duties? And it's not just the compilation of the invoices and sending those out, but it's understanding, you know, the account coding. Why is it, you know, is it falling into the right bucket? Mm-hmm. So it's an administrative and to some degree technical financial. We need to be able to produce graphs. We need to be able to understand the numbers. That is going to be somebody in Jennifer's shop. Mm-hmm. Does it fall within the administrative services tech 1, 2, 3? That, you know, so we may need some outside guidance as part of this overall situation. Jen did, or Rachel, did you have anything to add to that discussion?
No, I think you did a good, a good overview of it. We've just recently, Deb has compiled a list of all of her duties, which is going to help us. Everything that she does on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a monthly basis, a quarterly basis, a semi-annual basis, as far as, you know, audit support. So she just recently completed that list a few days ago. So that will give us kind of a good, give us a good grounding of in direction we need to go. And especially with engaging a consultant to help us determine what's going to fit best for the district.
Yes, Bob.
So just on that subject, on item 2, how firm is the 30 December date for presenting a plan?
It's firm enough because we're running into a deadline there. This is not fuzzy at the end, you know, that can be moved out. This is more of a, we have to have something done in a relatively short period of time. If nothing else, at that point in time, Bob, we're going to know, here's what we have remaining internally to see if we can work into the administrative tech positions, and here's what we can outsource, and here's how that relationship would work. We will have that dialed in so that we know what that next, whether we're going to have the consultant look more at it, or whether, again, so that timeline is just for presentation of what that plan looks like. It may not be the...
Look at Miss Hollywood that joined us down on the bottom of the screen.
Oh. Yeah. Bob, is that... I know that doesn't answer your question completely. I mean, it's...
It sort of does answer my question.
So is Deb retiring at the end of the year, or are we going to have her for longer?
I don't know exactly what her timeline is, and Jennifer had to exit for a little bit. Rachel, do you know?
Back, she plans on retiring in November 2021, end of November.
Okay, that's wonderful.
So I'm thinking by the end of the year. So I don't. It seems to me that it's unlikely that you're going to have a full plan to present by the end of the year. That date just seems kind of optimistic at this point.
Okay, would you prefer that we redefine, instead of it just being a presentation of a plan, it's more of a presentation on the direction, because it's either going to get kicked off to the consultant to look at what that position is, or it's just a matter of preparing a scope of work to get proposals. I'm still calling it a plan at this point.
Yeah.
That is a plan. I mean, yeah.
let's just call it not a due date, the beginning of the, by then we will have contacted a consultant, maybe, if all were, you know, right? Hopefully between now and December, you'll have, yeah, with Jennifer, or with Deb's Bible that she presented to Jennifer of that position, the upper management will have a better idea of what's, yep.
Absolutely.
What they want to, yeah. It's hard to evaluate something you've never done. It's hard to decide how to move forward when you're replacing a position that you've never held yourself. And
yeah, and in many cases, I don't present asks to that position that are outside that normal, their normal skill set, you know. There are some things that we pushed a little bit over the last month, just because I needed information that we hadn't produced internally before. And so I had to push the limits of that a little bit. And those are the kind of things that are going to happen going forward and in our decision-making, because when you contract out your payroll, it's just automatic. It just happens. And there's not a lot of thought and personality to it. Your accounts payable is the same thing. If we set ourselves up where we don't have the position and the skills with the skill sets, then that leaves Jennifer as the only one who's got to go out and either find it or do it herself. And that can be kind of a burden. The difficulty on the other end of that is if we go out, if we say, no, we are recruiting for an accountant, here's the job description, I don't, it's almost like Groveland recruiting for an engineer. We didn't have a lot of successes in the past, you know, but it could be a different labor market now.
Mm-hmm. One question, we'll forget if I don't ask you. I know you are familiar with contracting this work out. Are you familiar with contracting it out from somebody using Springbrook? Because that's what we use for all of these programs. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because yeah. I know a lot of, you know, accountants or CPAs aren't, you know, familiar with using Springbrook as the platform to perform these functions.
There's got to be more than the one that I have experience with. We just have to reach out and see who else is having that stuff farmed out. But I know that they had to be introduced to Springbrook in the beginning. You know, they didn't come into the accounting world using a Springbrook software, you know, but they learned it. It was a pretty simple database. So, yeah. So anyway,
to return to my original question, I'm not trying to... We try to use this list of goals and objectives, among other things, as an evaluation. I don't want to, if it's going to take 6 months to do this, that's all I'm just saying. It seems like it's unlikely that we're going to have a complete plan by the January meeting, just because there's so many unknowns and you're just beginning to get enough information to come to grips with it. So either redefine the goal slightly or, change the date or something. I just don't want to hit the end of the year and go, oh.
So since we're all seem to be aligned in that whole discussion, I would propose that we modify that as just for clarity, and that it's a presentation of an initial plan and direction. What are our next steps on this at the December board meeting? And that just, you know, that just gives me a 2 month timeline in there to have a couple initial meetings with staff and go through the list and make an initial determination. And then we'll check in December. And then when we do our January workshop, then we'll be able to define what the next deliverable and timeline is on that.
I think there's going to be things on this management objective
report that we are not going to be including in the evaluation. I mean, I would not evaluate, I wouldn't include the item we're talking about right now, item two, for the general manager's evaluation.
It certainly would come into an evaluation perspective if we let it run out and we lost the position and we didn't have a plan on how to fill it.
Yes. So yes. Then we could
performance problem. So what we need to do in the performance evaluation part of it is just is if we're in alignment and we're making progress and we're meeting the, you know, this is exactly what we need to do for this, Janice, is have the conversation so that we all agree on what we're achieving, because it's kind of unknown what all of these is going to come into the evaluation.
Right.
You know.
Right. I would think this would be more of this particular item would be more would be under the goals of keeping all positions filled with qualified employees, that type of goal.
Yeah.
Not a specific accounting goal. Unless you failed to keep it.
Yeah.
I'd probably disagree with you on that point, but I'm not disagreeing with the approach. I mean, this is our internal accounting position is, because of the small size of the district, unique. It is a position that, though the extent to which it would be involved in evaluation would be, this has to be covered somehow. I mean, we either got to replace the position or outsource the position or some combination of the above. And I think that's a valid goal. Making this particular report is not, it's just an interim thing. It's not an evaluable thing. I just want to make sure that we don't end up saying, well, how come we didn't get a plan? So I think an update on the direction we're taking and potentially maybe you know who the consultant is likely to be at that point. That's going to be involved would be a reasonable thing for the end of the year. But certainly having this function covered somehow by Deb's retirement is actually pretty darn.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, good point.
Thank you for your comment.
So I will just leave the personnel part just by saying the one other thing that we're putting the finishing touches on is Jen calls it a manifesto. It's kind of a I've been trying to purge out what makes Groveland CSD special, what the expectations are, so that as we're bringing all of these new folks in, and even when we're interviewing, you know, do they have buy-in? Do they understand what the culture is here and what we're here to, you know, how we're here to support them and grow them. And, you know, we don't care that they're going to go off somewhere else. We do, but we don't. We want to develop the best employees that we can to provide the highest level of service that we possibly can and do that in a very responsible way. So we've got this cultural document that should be finalized here fairly soon. We'll share it as soon as it's in a good condition. But I think it's going to say a lot about who we are as GCSD, and we'll be able to speak from that position all the time. And because it is really a special place. We provide a high level of service. We are we're damn good at what we do. So anyway, that's in draft. It doesn't really fix anything other than it might help us when we're recruiting and we have some decisions to be made on whether they have a real understanding and buy-in on, hey, this is our culture and I'm in. here's some examples of how I fit into that culture. That's really a good thing in an interview process.
Yeah, when a fire comes, we put on Nomex. When a flood comes, we put on hip boots. When the power goes out, we start the generators. And we're always operating. We don't quit.
Yep. So anyway, we're struggling to stay staffed up. It's putting a lot of stress on Louie and on Adam primarily, in that regard. But how are you holding up, Louie?
Good. Doing good.
Yeah.
I think it's a little intense every once in a while, but I'm just plugging along.
Yeah.
Today was a good prime factor of the intenseness, you know, phone calls and then this meeting, but it's all good stuff.
Yeah.
We're moving in the right direction.
Notice he doesn't have his video on, so we can't see how frazzled he may look.
Yeah.
You're out.
He always
looks good. I didn't shower this morning.
And, 24 hours a day, he looks right. I don't get it. So I'm going to move on then to policies and all of that. And I'll just let you know, this is where I am really struggling, just because it's not an easy thing for me to move on to others on staff, because we're working on a million other things that are priorities and relevant, and this takes an all-encompassing effort when it comes to things like the water ordinance and park ordinance and sewer ordinance and those kind of things, because they haven't been updated on a regular basis, and there are many things in our existing ordinance that are not understood because none of the staff was around when it was put together, and so we don't understand it. And there's not a good document trail. That doesn't mean we can't just write it out and rewrite it completely, which is kind of where we are with the sewer ordinance. But that, I'll just tell you, I haven't really got a good handle on where we're going with that. When I get to the point of still not making any progress on it, and we really need to get it done, you know, there are consultant options to do it. That still does require a lot of effort on the part of the district to do it. You know, many districts just have their legal counsel update their ordinances. That is not always functional. So I'm not sure how else to address this, other than, you know, we do have a very draft sewer ordinance that we kicked around about a year ago. We need to sit down and get that before the board, if we can live with the language, and then move on to the water ordinance. Still, again, I'm struggling with this. You see that I did propose to take off the overall objective about the policies, because I don't want to put something on this list just because I know it needs to be done, but in terms of priorities and focus and everything else, it's just going to happen on an as-needed basis, would be my recommendation. That's the very last item under policies. We've been doing some as far as the work at home policy and amendments to other policies, but to say that I'm going to bring one to each meeting has not been an option lately.
It's not like you're busy.
No. So, at some point I would like to check off addition to the board orientation program, which is the training schedule. And I don't know if anybody had a chance to take a look at that, the graphic.
Yes. Did you get my message about John taking the virtual one of the emails we got from Neil has
the instead of the annual meetings that people can go to, or the SDRMA management meetings and stuff, John can do them online and get credit, and we could get our complete every director certification.
Right, yeah.
About that this morning, Janet.
Rachel and I are going to talk about that after the meeting.
Cool.
Yeah. So that is also within that, the board orientation document. If you take a look at that, and it's not on the agenda for any type of action, but I just want to make sure that that is reflective of where we, the type of thinking we had for that. This would be in the board orientation program. It would be ultimately, this would go to the board for at least an endorsement that this is what the expectation is, and would be dropped in the front of the board policies. And anyway, this is,
yeah, for what it's worth, I liked it a lot. I think it's very, very well, you know, it's concise and it's well put together, and it covers all the things that we, you know, would really like to have all of the directors do in a reasonable time frame. No one, of course, can be compelled to do any of it because you can't, but we can certainly, we can certainly say that that's the expectation. And the reason is that way we get to get a certificate of whatever the heck they're calling it.
What's interesting is when you talk to some of the districts that are very active and engaged, you talk to directors that just came in and they said, oh, it's a requirement of our district, because they don't know any, they don't know that they're just compelled by a policy statement. They were told when they came in that it was required. And so they assumed it was like the ethics training and harassment training.
Yeah.
Absolutely mandatory. And, you know, maybe it is, but there's no recourse if a board member doesn't take it, other than you can publicly.
Good for John, right, John?
Publicly shame him.
Yeah. Anyway, but it's, you know, I mean, we certainly all came together on this stuff. And anyway, I will put this on the agenda for action. Is that okay? For November?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we can certainly endorse it. I mean, we can't, you know, we can't really use the words requirement, but we can certainly endorse those goals as a board.
Okay. So we'll drop that on the agenda and have specific discussion about that. Because, I mean, it has budget implications and everything else. Jen and Rachel, did you have any thoughts on that chart, that flow chart? With the training? Okay. So that's something to check off and take off of the list. I have a December 8th date for an initial review of a revised draft sewer ordinance. I'm gonna keep that on there so that I can stay focused on it. I think it's probably between Jen and I to focus on that and get that back to the board. We dealt with the winter averaging, the water ordinance and sewer, or the water ordinance and park ordinance. I'm proposing that we move out to April of 2021 to give us a little bit more time. There's, you know, if something comes up and we've got to make a change to something, we will. And I do want to keep them on the radar, but if you don't mind, we'll move those out.
Okay.
Okay. Just a question. I've no problem with moving them out. Ordinances take a long time. How are we handling the legal requirement to not shut people, or to restricting our ability to shut people off, because that probably contradicts our water ordinance.
I'll just speak from the ordinance perspective. It is an option for in our ordinance, but it's not a mandatory. The ordinance doesn't say shall be locked off, I don't believe. I think it is, it's presented as an option. The district may discontinue water service.
But I mean, it doesn't really, I mean, if we conflict with state law is going to prevail, but I just wondered if that is an exposure.
I don't know. We haven't been, Jen and Rachel, if you want to just let them know our current thoughts on that, because that is going to come up in the future.
So we had discussed revisiting SB 998 as far as locking, having the ability to lock people off. The lien process has been very time consuming and very involved, a lot more than we initially had anticipated. And the amount of accounts that we're having to place liens on is significantly more than we had originally anticipated. Following up on them, just the amount of administrative work itself. So with having a little bit of experience of doing that, we want to revisit, and I actually have a task currently assigned to the administrative team right now to look back into the feasibility of complying with SB 998 in order to be able to actually lock people off again.
How time consuming is that compared to locking people off, turning them back on?
Rachel, I've never done any utility billing functions before, so I'm going to go ahead and let Rachel speak to that.
As far as the SB 998 guidelines, and Megan and Renee and I have been reviewing it, it is very, very cumbersome as well. So I think that we just have to figure out which is weighed more, which one is going to be more time consuming and which one is going to be more effective. They're both equally time consuming. So we're still evaluating the process.
Okay. Okay.
Jenna, so we're getting, I mean, you said, so we're seeing a lot more defaults than we were anticipating. I mean, I guess that's just everybody's being out of work problems, and there's just not as much money around. So we're getting a lot more than our average number of failures.
Yes. I mean, right, Rachel? So we're getting significantly more people. I think people have, prior to COVID happened, I mean, we had SB 998 and it was kind of whatever. And then COVID happened. And it's just, I think there's a lot more people that are, especially like renters and stuff, that are understanding that they don't have, that there's no penalty for not paying a bill. They can just not pay it and not pay it and nothing's going to happen. And then I think they probably think eventually that it's going to be forgiven or something. So yes, we've had a lot of people not pay. Go ahead, Rachel. I see you want to say something.
So that's another thing that we have noticed, that most of the liens that we've been placing are actually tenants. And so then when the property owner comes to find out that there's a lien on their property because they can't get money from their tenant, it's been really unfortunate for the property owner in itself. And then sometimes also people will place the lien on the property for that 90-day past due notice, as we've tried, we've informed them, if you don't make a payment or a payment arrangement in 90 days, we'll have to place the lien, et cetera. And then they'll come into the office and they'll make a payment, but it might not be in the whole amount of the lien. And so then we're having to keep track back and forth of which account has a lien on it, which one's on the tax roll, when the balance is paid, like the lien amount balance is paid, then we'll have to contact the county to release the lien. And then there's more fees associated with that. So it's just a process. So we're just trying to figure out right now which process is going to be more efficient and get people to pay their bills at the same time, if that makes sense.
when you're saying then at a certain point, then they come, you know, once the lien's on there, they come in and pay it, but maybe only a partial. When you're saying they, do you mean the tenants are paying it or the owner?
Either or. We have both scenarios. Yeah, we have both scenarios right now. But you can't release the lien until that liened amount is paid for. So then, you know, we have Megan in there doing cash receipts, and she's also trying to keep track of all of these liens. But then within the next 90 days, it's already time to do it over again. So then we're filing that second lien, and it just keeps going and going. So,
yeah, it's a really difficult system to track, especially when you're not getting paid in full amounts, because then you have to see like, okay, well, does this payment satisfy the first lien? And then how many more payments if that's satisfied? And some of these properties have multiple liens on them, you know, just mm-hmm. so it gets, as far as tracking everything, it takes a lot of administrative work. And it's, you know, it's just really unfortunate because right before all this happened, the district was really dialed in, and we had the least amount of lock-offs and notices that we had ever sent, because, you know, locking people off is a very effective way to get them to pay their bill.
Yes. Okay, so I'm going to move on. We will, I don't believe there's any real exposure at this point, Bob, related to that, and we'll be bringing a policy recommendation back to the board on that. So the it, first off, just is the board okay with moving those out to April related to the water ordinance and park ordinance? And then the other change would be removing the general policy monthly updates to the policy manual as a management objective. I'm looking for places to cut back a little bit. It doesn't mean that we're not going to get policies done. It just means that I don't think I'm going to be able to commit to having them on a monthly basis on the agenda. Are we okay with those changes at this point?
I'm good.
I think we have to make some adjustments for, I mean, nobody was expecting all this crap to hit at the same time. So yeah.
Yeah. Any other policy thoughts, things that, and I'm not squealing, hey, we can't take on anymore. Any other, if there are any other priorities or things that we think we need to address from the board's perspective.
Mm-mm.
Okay. I'll move on to, just the financial reserve policies, that I'm proposing that we go with what we have, what we presented at this meeting at this point, and the understanding of the reserves as they were established before in the rate increases, and that we not take any additional action on setting targets or amounts or anything else for these reserves until we get the master plan completed. Sure. So I'll just drop this off the list.
Okay.
Which is item 9.
Okay.
It'll come back on after we get there'll be a number of actions out of the master plan approval.
Okay.
Okay. So dropping down to the next section, starting with number 12, we're pushing really hard to try to get this master plan wrapped up. Unfortunately, when, you know, between COVID,
yeah,
and just a lot of things that we didn't have available for this master plan update. Not the fault of anybody here, but just the, you know, some of the data that would have been really helpful and other things were not readily available. So it's taken a lot longer to get that master plan wrapped up, but it looks like if we can get through these last technical memos and get the comments back to them, they're going to be able to start actually drafting the final report. So that is still on, and that'll have the capital improvement program and the water and sewer master plan. So those are, I've got those as yellow just because they've stalled so long, but they're actually on track to move forward. And then we've got a consultant contract for the water and sewer connection fee study. We called it a development impact fee study. That is progressing. That is also a lot of work because they asked for there are 4 pages of data request, and a lot of the data we didn't have readily accessible. So we're having to pull things together. But it's all necessary to be able to do these studies. And then from here forward, they'll all be together. So it's more of an effort than just a contract and getting somebody on board to do the study. It's been many hours on Jen's part and mine as well to get that moving. We've got a number of good things that we've reported on lately, securing the funding agreement for the sewer system project. Yeah, that's that was an effort. And I did send a copy of that to Kay Crow the minute that we got it, just so that she would know that we've accomplished that. And
did you hear back from her?
The passion of hers. I believe she said good job. Anyway, I just wanted to keep, you know, there were people that were very intimate with that process for a long time.
Yes. And
we checked that off. That doesn't mean that's the end of the work because we've got a major project to implement now and do it in short order. Add to that the Clearwell project. We just received notification yesterday that the budget was approved. We had to submit a budget package to the state. We have the agreement in place, but we had to submit a budget package after we got the bids in. The state finally approved that, so that project can proceed. We have a contractor on board, so we'll inform the board of what the schedule is on that as soon as we get it from the contractor.
I thought.
So that is that's another really, really huge project. You know, so you're talking close to $10 million right there.
Who's the contractor?
I knew you were going to ask, Spence. We awarded the contract. I don't remember the name because it was July. Do you remember, Rachel?
I'm trying to think right now, too.
Anyway, all right. We'll find out at the next board meeting. No worries.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I'll be able to give you an update. We've already approved the contract, but hopefully by the next board meeting, I'll have a schedule from them on when we're going to issue the notice to proceed and when they're going to start and what their schedule looks like. But I'll keep you aware of that. So some of these things are actually going to be able to come off of this list in the future, which makes me very happy. The CDBG application was prepared and submitted and was not completed until about, I think, September. And it was considered completed when the county submitted their audit for 2 years ago. And by that time, the entire amount of the funds had been consumed. There was no substantial carryover money. At least it hasn't materialized yet. So it's likely that our project will have to go back into the competition through the county process for the notice of funding that will be issued in January. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in January, sometime in December, the county will probably do a call for projects. We'll submit our project. In January, they'll have the NOFA will come out and they'll know what the rules are. And then I think it's by April, we have to have the application in, but we'll have it in. We'll be the first one in. So hopefully we'll get a notice by summertime that project's funded. Meanwhile, we are still moving forward. We still have a funding application for that project in to the State Water Board. So it is always possible that the State Water Board could say that project has risen to the point of getting an agreement. It's not the water through the state revolving fund. It's based on priority. And that is, it's considered other water system defects, and it's not a super high priority over a project that addresses contamination. So it may not be funded in the near future through the state. I don't know if there are any other questions. We added a number of new initiatives last quarter related to the fire services and 21A, B, C, and D, and E, and through D, and those are all moving forward. We did have some successes in this revised CAL FIRE contract. It's huge, but we're still also having discussions with the county on at least a couple times a week, moving forward with other funding discussions and all that. And then E and F, F will obviously, we just received the revised CAL FIRE contract, so it's ready to go on the agenda for November. 21E was the direction of the board at the last board meeting, and we'll be taking the actions to form that community facilities district within the district. The first thing from that is a request for proposals to get the consultant on board. Let's see. The long-term park service funding plan, seeing that we're not in a major crisis, that as far as priorities and this short-term horizon, I and while we're planning projects and all of that, I think that needs to, I can't be measured on the success of that. Let's pull that off if at all possible at this point. That is item number 23.
Okay.
I mean, that it, a lot depends on if the fire measure is successful, mm-hmm. the fire tax, and the and we get a community facilities district formed, that's going to be the future of the funding, because it's going to take the heat off of the property tax dollars, ad valorem property tax dollars, to be able to allocate more to park if needed, if we can. And so anyway.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, because the alternative would be to come up with some sort of a separate park funding mechanism, and that would be way too much work for you to add to trying to put together right now. I mean,
right.
Maybe you will.
Yeah, I agree. That was pretty much my thinking there is, it's something that we definitely need to think about. It's not a burning need at this point, and a lot of these are burning needs. Speaking of which, a burning need is item number 24 and 24A and B. 24A is easy to accomplish once we send them our improvement plan. We are struggling a little bit with putting together that capital improvement plan, just because we're in a little bit of flux of how much of that, how much of our existing inventory of assets need to be renovated in some way. And that is going to be part of the evaluation that this WRT is going to do, the consultant that we authorized at the last board meeting. But once they have looked at it, and if they say, yeah, go ahead and plan the improvements to the skate park or whatever we do, then all we have to do is submit a very simple application to the state, and that money is there waiting for us, the $185,000. So it's going a little bit slower than I'd like, but it's primarily just because I keep bouncing all over the place. If Louis could fix grass and repair sprinklers and do stuff like that, he'd do it all day long. But, you know, to try to plan whether we're going to replace the bathrooms or upgrade the bathrooms, and, you know, if we've got adequate ADA access to things and all of that, that's still a lot of work. So I have a revised schedule of the December board meeting for the plan, and the plan is just basically going to be a list of projects, capital improvement projects that would be included in an application to the state. So does that make sense? The application, again, is just a simple form to show that it's a capital project. And then We're still on item 26. We're still working out the details on the agreement with Cal.net. It's in their court. They haven't responded back at this point. They're more dealing with getting more cell towers up right now, or more data towers. The item number 27. Looking at moving that out about 6 months, just because we've got some things in advance that need to happen. I want to keep it on the radar, just because I want to plug away at it while we're going through the municipal service review with the county and looking at that annexation. And so it may happen faster, just to save cost and effort. But I will be bringing something to the board relatively soon related to the lighting district. Is that something that you want to have as a priority action for me? I can't tell you at this point what it's going to do. I just know that there's money sitting there that the county said they've got to give back to taxpayers. If they don't spend it, they don't have the capacity to spend it. They don't want to be part of the lighting district anymore.
I have no problem with making a lower priority. My main issue with that would be I'd want to be convinced why we would want to take on the lighting district.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just more work for you guys.
Why would I take a bite of a tangerine when I'm talking?
After you asked a question, yeah.
Because it was good.
It was right in front of you.
Then eat me.
Ooh, and the water's going to taste really yucky now.
Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. That was dumb. I just reached over and grabbed it. Okay, so I'm going to move that out. If I will know within the next quarter whether that is something that's going to move forward or whether it's completely off the radar. Mm-hmm. If it's off the radar, I'll drop it off. But it's a fairly simple process for me to make that determination. So then getting down into the actions to improve the district financial condition, we're doing pretty good. I needed to have a good look at where we are with things, and I think we've put some things in place. We are moving forward with the funding measure through the county. If that falls apart or is unsuccessful, we're going to do it on our own. And luckily the heat has been removed a little bit with the county taking on the Amador. So it buys us an extra couple of years. Not that we're going to sit back on it, but that's I think we're doing good on all of those objectives moving forward. I didn't know if there was anything else financially that the board thought we needed to address or anything different at this point.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I'm going to move down into management, administration, and accountability. The district of distinction, we just talked about that a little bit ago with the online training. We're not far from achieving that. It's not something that I'm putting any effort into. There's nothing more that I can do. But if John does go through it, we'll immediately submit an application and should be approved. So we've completed the LAFCO representation on item number 32. We got that one done. We've got municipal service review item 33 that is done every 5 years through LAFCO. And we had talked about doing a presentation on that. If it comes out in draft or in final before our January workshop. I think we should make that as a focus of that. It's a really, really awesome effort that, that Rachel went through in getting the documentation to them and answering their questions. And I think it's going to be a really good report. The technology items under number 34, those continue. I woke up thinking about Cartograph, Springbrook, CalCAD, TrackStar, all of the softwares that we've implemented lately to be able to track our actions and make sure that that we stay on track with everything. And the conversion to Springbrook is a big deal that that Jen could talk to you for hours on, all the logistical stuff to make those conversions. But those are all upgrades that are going to take us to the next level. They're all moving forward very well. The item marked completed with a hyperlink there is just basically a link to our website that has ongoing additions to it, but it's the new customer page so that we can lead customers through various pieces of information that are relevant to them. Take a look when you get a chance, go to the district website, go to the new customer page and see if there are things that you feel need to be added or if it's clear. And I think they did a great job of getting that together. Our records management is records inventory and management program. Awesome. We're really doing a very, very thorough job that is going to serve the future very well. It takes a lot of effort because it's a lot of different people working on things that in many cases they haven't worked on before. And Rachel's being very, very patient. So it's been primarily Rachel and I and Jen and Renee and Megan holding down the fort. So things are all working out really well with all of this stuff. So I'm done talking. It's an overwhelming list of things to do.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I don't have to reference it because it comes automatic. There's a lot that I need to jump in here and delegate, but I've got to find find that window of opportunity to be able to do it. So you're getting a lot of good things done.
Well, this is a great report. I like it better. Every time you do it, it gets better, Pete. I like to see, I've highlighted things that are completed, and that's nice to see too.
Yeah. I can't wait for the day when it's all completed and I can just set it aside.
Yeah.
That will never, that day
we'll
never.
We'll find some more things to put on there. Then.
Yeah, I know.
We'll find some new ones. They keep popping up on here.
Yeah.
I can dream, can't he?
Yes, he can. He can. Or we can just call it something else.
This time we only added, I only added a couple and removed a couple. So I think we're pretty flush.
I just chime in when I, just real quickly, that sure. It's just so exciting. You guys work together so seamlessly and beautifully as a team, the board and Pete and who you guys have brought on the team and those that have been on the team forever. And I remember first talking to Pete about him being so excited, like, God, I finally got GCSD. Yay. I'm going to do all these great things and have the right team in place. And it's amazing to watch and get to tell people about it. So just want to brag about you guys a little bit and clap my hands.
Hey.
Thanks, Ronnie.
Thank you, Ronnie.
Yes, thank you.
I brag about us all the time.
That's the thing. Some of these exercises like this may seem mundane and not necessary. And yeah, I get it. Okay, let's go. But in reality, when you have a bad board, or bad management, this becomes particularly important. Because, you know, there would be, in some cases, some of the board members I've had, there would be absolute disagreement on 85% of this stuff or more, you know, just, you know, have a different mindset about how things go. So this creates an alignment and just checking in to make sure that we're going the right direction. And hopefully you feel confident that if I need to, that if you think I need to add something in, that doesn't mean, oh, it's not on the list, I'm not going to do it. That doesn't exist in my world, you know. It changes every day. Sometimes it's kind of hard to put your hands on and put it down on paper because it's ever evolving. But we've had some...
I'm sure you have lists we've never seen before.
But you know what? Janice, I stopped keeping lists back in about the time that I joined TUD in 2006 because it just was overwhelming, you know. This is about the listiest that I get, having this document, because it's automatic.
Listiest.
It's more of a strategic approach than a list approach.
Good.
Because I'll generate a list a mile long on one topic in my head of things that have to happen, you know. But I used to put them down and I get so frustrated because I had all the things that I was supposed to do yesterday. And then I've added the stuff for today. And then I carry the stuff from today and yesterday forward. And that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Ronnie's right. You know, when you've got a... listiest.
Yes.
You've got a team that functions, you know, somebody can say, I just can't do it, I got to take a couple of days off, and we just make it happen, you know. We rise up for each other, and we understand each other, and we work toward the end result, and when you have the support of the board, it makes it all work, you know.
It would be really, really exciting. I should say will be, if we want to like put it out there, right? That the entire community of Groveland Big Oak Flat could come together and use you guys as an example of what collaboration and true teamwork and a common direction and a common understanding can accomplish. It's a dream of mine to see for Groveland, but I think GCSD is a great example of how teams are supposed to work. And it's super exciting. I get like choked up. It's so weird. I don't know why I start crying over GCSD, but you guys are just great. It's exciting having lived in Groveland when I did, for as long as I did, and growing up and seeing the positive changes that are happening is just really great. So thanks to all of you guys.
I agree with Ronnie, but also with the great leader.
Yes. Yeah. I know I'm proud to be part of this team and happy as a clam.
Yeah,
I'll just make a remark about this report is getting to be really good. I know that it's extremely long. I'm glad that we're all okay with the idea of meeting once a quarter to go over it, because I think it's really important. We don't, you know, we, the board members, don't deal with this stuff every day. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to forget what's going on and how complicated things are and how many things there are to have to work on. And our job, to the extent that we can do anything about this, is if we see something that is, you know, really not a high enough priority, you know, it's take stuff off. I mean, so that we got a list that's a little easier to, it's not quite so listy, that's a little easier to comprehend. But I'm these meetings, I think, have proven to be very useful. I find, because I lose track, you know, because we
Yeah,
the way everybody's saying listy, I feel like I'm on CNN and ABC.
Hey Jennifer, I'm gonna ask you for a one word description of the function of the district or the board in January of 2018. I mean, I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but that's...
Wait, can you repeat that?
January of 2018. You know, rewind back to that time. and the, you know, the maturity and the growth and the, you know, the building the staff and your staff and some of your concerns. The day that I walked in the door, I was looking for a non curse word description of where the district was in January 2018. I couldn't find one.
I can't think of one, but very
clean,
very challenged in every way.
I was just telling Leo, this isn't one word, but I never do anything in one word. But literally just in the last week or two that I think it was probably when we got the Big Daddy grant email or something like that. And I was said, this is what, when you have like a professional person running the district who has lived it and breathed it and ate it and slept it for years and years and years and years. So, you know, just this professional person. And then I kind of equated it to like at the printing plant. There were people who started as a person just offloading books, you know, just the literally, you know, labor type person, worked their way up to a pressman, worked their way up to manager, worked their way up to whatever. And like one of them was my boss. He was a great pressman and quality control manager, but he couldn't do math or figure out fractions, or if he had directives to up the speeds by 10%, he didn't know how to figure out what he needed to up it to. And it's like, oh, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. So of course it was good because he thought I was brilliant because I could do that. But at some point, there's not everybody is meant to be at that high level who can keep everything going like you can, Pete.
Wow. That's very nice.
It's so uncomfortable. He gets so uncomfortable.
I gotta project it out to the. I gotta give it to Rachel and to Jen. You know, I mean, I was gonna ask Rachel early on. You know, did you ever expect that you would be doing some of the technical, administrative, and financial, and project management, and you know, she did that when she walked in the door, that wasn't in the cards, but she just does every single thing Jen has given her. She just jumps on it and makes it happen, you know?
Well, I can only do everything that I do because I have your guys' support. So it really goes off to you guys.
I'm never doing that again. Sorry. Good job, Rachel. I know it's like, When I first started here, it hadn't been too long since you had just began, and you were tickled to death to have the job and the opportunity, and look how far you have come, my dear.
Thank you. I'm still happy.
Good.
You're the most reliable people that I've ever met.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's nice, everybody.
Yeah, and so anyway, and you can't do it without a good board. Janice and I were sharing some stories of my past.
Everybody has to wear an Indian headdress at the next meeting, okay?
Can I make my own?
Yes.
No, I just want to add though, like what Pete just said about you cannot do it without a good board, because that's what I will tell. Well, it's not one word, but one of my biggest things I told Pete was, if you ever get a board that's functional, by the time I leave this district, I will be a happy person, because I have not seen it. And there's just so much fighting and bickering and just not seeing things for what was needed to be seen. And I still will challenge. I mean, if we had a very, very difficult director like we have had in the past, I'd be really interested to see Pete overcome that one. But I will, it has been, you know, without a board that supports the district and trusts in management's recommendations with things, we would not be where we are, because we wouldn't have staff would not be given the tools to be successful with budgets and studies. And a lot of the time people don't think you need to spend money on things. And one of the things I think Pete's shown is the districts, we've spent a lot more money than we ever have in the past on projects and consultants and everything else. And our, you know, I mean, with the exception of fire, which is understandable, our bottom line has increased and gotten better. So it's it really does though, because without a board, everything starts at the board and then trickles down. And without a good board, we would not be able to accomplish the good things that we're doing. So, and it, as a staff member, it feels wonderful to finally not be stagnant or just, you know, getting through the next day and getting through the next fiscal year, to really be doing a lot more than before. It's challenging and it's wonderful and I love it.
I think a key word that Jen used and just used is trust. Mm-hmm. I think there's a tremendous amount of trust. I know I trust what Pete does. I would never tell him how to do something. We as a board ask him to do things and he does them.
Mm-hmm. We don't it's even just, have to ask him, he just does them because he knows.
Yeah, we don't even have to ask him. Absolutely, Nance. And it's just, you know, it's coming to see how the board, how the district's moving along and getting things done. We accomplish little steps every day and we hear about them on a monthly basis. And then once a quarter, we see how far we've gone, the miles we've gone. And it's because we trust. Jen, you're absolutely right. That's a key word, ma'am.
And again, it's not just Pete, it's Louie and Greg and Jen and Rachel and every other single person, because
everybody has stepped
up. And Ron.
I agree, Nancy. Everybody has stepped up. Myself included. I've stepped up.
Yeah.
I don't mean to, good point, because I don't want to leave Louie out.
Oh, no.
Louie.
It's just the, you know, the operation of the district just happens. Mm-hmm. And it happens right. And when it happens right all the time and you don't have to think about it, you get not complacent to it, but it doesn't rise up unless it bites you, you know. But Louie doesn't let it, not only does he, you know, keep it going right, he's passionate about it and he doesn't let it bite anybody. And if it does bite, he's all over it, you know. I mean, he's put in just a tremendous amount of effort, and he's been put in a position that he probably never really thought he was going to be in that responsible role, but he's absolutely the right one and doing a great job. And
absolutely. I agree, Pete.
Yes. I feel like too, that being in this position that I am now, you know, your staff are the people who make you shine ultimately, because me just being by myself, no matter how much I did, I would never, people wouldn't be saying good job, because I'm only able to accomplish these things because my entire staff is accomplishing them, or everybody's running efficiently and doing what they need to do, because not one person could do everything. So it's really, I'm very appreciative of my staff. For the first time ever, I've had everybody just, you know, working really well and eager and happy. And it makes my life so much easier, and it allows me to move on to other things and pay, like put more attention and focus into things like the financial reports and stuff to improve those. So it's just, it really is a team effort all the way from the top to the bottom and back up again.
Jen, you're 100% right with that, because when I know your approach to take on the position that you're in now, same thing like me to take over the position I'm in now. There's no way I would have ever taken it with the board we had if we didn't have the people in place to run it with me. I relied on the people that I was going to be over, and it's worked out great. And now everything's changed around, and here we are, and got about $10 million in grants with projects coming out of our ears, and it's just amazing. So it's awesome.
There seems to be a chemistry that's going on in the district that's really good. Everybody works really well together. Jennifer, you and I have been here about the same amount of time. I think I came here maybe a month earlier than you, but it's the same amount of time. And the things that you and I have seen and been through, and the boards that I've sat on and you've had to deal with, and just everything, the district, you know, Pete talked about managers. Yes, we had a manager that was not the best for the district. And that was big mistake on my part. I was part of that. And you just have to live to learn to live with it and face it and say that you made the mistake and stay and work it out. And, you know, it's been really rewarding the last few years. And John Sterling did an awesome job. And Pete, you've just taken it all the way up to the rest of the level. And I couldn't be happier sitting on this board. And I didn't want to get off the board because I wanted to make sure that I straightened out the things I messed up. And now I just want to stay on the board because it's good.
So I think since we're just all having a little retrospective here, the word, the trust is really important. And I think one of what's working is, Pete, you trust Louis and you trust Jen to run their operations. And so they do. And, you know, we as a board trust you. And so you do. And I assume that percolates all the way down. It's the opposite of micromanagement. I mean, you have to have faith in people. And then occasionally, and I'm not talking about anybody here, but I mean, just in general, occasionally you have to remove somebody because it turns out they aren't able, you know, for one reason or another, they're not the right person. But when you've got the right people, which you do, you trust them and they do their job. And like you said, the place just runs. So that it's made, certainly made it being a board member a lot less work, a lot less angst than it was.
Yeah. All good words.
All good.
Really just, it, you
should,
know.
Should we all sing Kumbaya right now?
it's what it takes to make the organization work. You know, it's kind of like I hit a point.
One thing for away from my car.
In my life and in my career I knew it coming in. I mean, I knew just sitting there, actually seeing it happen without me being there and knowing this was, you know, watching the general manager recruitment process and understanding what, you know, it led me to understand that the district didn't know what it needed. You know, it was focused on in a different direction. It's just something that small, you know, looking at, okay, they're recruiting their manager, but they're driven by factors that don't pertain to good management, you know, that don't necessarily drive, you know, I'm not saying that there was any wrong decisions made then by any means, but it just, it really, it was really obvious that I was going to jump in with 2 feet. I've been, you know, watching the district for years and years. And, for me, it's the, it may be stressful, but it's the most, it's the biggest to-do list I've had, in my career, which drives me because that, oh, you know, there's just so many options, not only that, but it's so many learning potentials and ownership and leadership potential for the staff that are there, you know, because there's just, you know, a lot to learn and a lot to take responsibility for, and everybody's willing to do it. So we act while we can. We just keep it going. I've had the board member that called me at 7:45 every morning on their way to the office to tell me that I was useless.
What? Jeez. Give me his name. I'm going to talk to that guy.
Doing everything wrong. And that for me, that really, really, really screws me up. You know, I internalize it. It's like, oh, God, you know, and so I would work even harder, you know, but in many cases, what you're doing is you're working harder to address the fears or concerns or interests of an individual when you have four others that are just dialed in. And I look back at the history of the district, and I just can't even fathom some of the things that went on with, you know, to you, John, or with you, because of the personalities in the room that drove you to you know, to just things that made it impossible for the district to focus on its mission. And so I you know, appreciate the board every day, just the, you know, this is, it's amazing to hear all of you say what you've said, and I can tell you mean it, and it's really meaningful to all of us. So
well, we had to have the sheriff called on one of our board members. So I mean,
yes, yeah. I heard about that.
Oh yeah, we've had we had some knockout, drag out real battles. It was ridiculous, some of the stuff that we've had here.
To be one of the three new board members and to be lucky enough to find Pete when Spencer and I were set on that task was a godsend.
We were lucky.
Vince, you need to go in 2 minutes.
Yes, I have to go pick up a 6-year-old that I love dearly. And this has been a good meeting, and I appreciate it. And thank you, Pete, Jen, Rachel. You guys take it easy. I must leave to go pick up this magnificent little girl.
All right. You enjoy. Hey, thank you, everybody, and appreciate it.
Give those grandbabies a big hug.
Every time I get a chance.
Bye, Ronnie.
Bye, Ronnie. Bye, everybody.
Are we adjourned?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
We're dropping like flies. Hey, John, thanks for coming to the office to, you know.